Christ is still the King.
Welcome to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
We are coming to you live, rainy Des Moines, Iowa, in the Mercy Live Up Studio. Iowa Catholic Radio, 1150 AM, 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM, streaming live, iowacatholicradio.com. And if you have the Iowa Catholic Radio app, brought to you by Blessman Ministries and the People's Abstract Company, you can be darn tootin' nearly anywhere in God's green creation and hear this podcast, radio show. And then you can hear it on podcasts later, on Facebook, iTunes, and all those wonderful places you can get podcasts. Bud, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. It's strange. I was thinking about it. It feels like it's been raining during our show a lot in 2017.
I know. I think that is 1990s Bo would have like a very insightful emotional response.
I'd like to think it's because we bring the thunder.
Oh, hey. Hey, you know, a stupid observation I've noticed is it actually thunders and lightnings in Iowa far less than either Kansas or Oklahoma. So when it was, you know, storming last night, my kids were actually surprised, and I was very ashamed as an Oklahoman father.
Well, as your friend, I've always admired your curiosity about science, and I've noticed recently when we've been hanging out, you've got some app on your phone that shows you how far the lightning is, right?
Yeah.
Am I imagining this?
No, yeah, like the radar map will tell you how far lightning is. So like for me, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But like for the rest of my family, it's fear-inducing.
It's fear-inducing for me.
It's coming after you.
So for you, is it kind of like, is it a preparation thing or mainly just...
No, what I wish, I need to get, we have a, this will lead into stuff, right? So we are underwritten by Mercy College of Health Sciences, yeah. And one of our colleagues there, Darren Raspberry, is like an honest-to-goodness storm chaser. Like, yeah. I grew up wanting to be one, and I was one unofficially, because if you're in Oklahoma and you have a car, you just go drive after tornadoes, because you're not smart. But Darren, he's the real deal, so he knows all these buddies, and dude, the apps he has, they don't just tell you where lightning's coming. It's like predictive and all stuff like that. So no, I just really love storms because I'm weird.
I have a love-hate with storms. You know, as a Nebraskan, I am different than we've had friends visit from the coast or whatever. And if there's a tornado warning, it can just be petrifying. As a Nebraskan or an Oklahoman, you know, if you hear about that, you actually go out onto the porch,
right,
to survey the land. But I have a lot of nightmares about tornadoes.
Oh, like you do?
Being chased by tornadoes, not being able to get off the highway.
The only nightmare of a tornado I have is the movie Twister. I know I bring this up like every third, but it's terrible. Folks, Waukeeta, Oklahoma, a real place. That's where I went to church growing up. But that is not how Oklahomans act. Do not watch Twister. Okay, let's get down to serious things. So yes, Mercy College of Health Science. What all have we been up to, Bud?
Well, one thing that's been exciting about this summer is that we've kicked off a philosophy course. And I love the fact that as part of Mercy's Catholic identity, we can teach courses like that. And today we're talking to Adam DeVille, a friend of yours, who has written some on plundering the Egyptians, this idea that Christians should use the cultural resources, even of pagan writers. Sometimes we see this in the early church. And so at Mercy, we get to do that when we teach by looking at the history of philosophy. Of course, when you get further down the timeline, you know, the great philosophers are Catholics. But just teaching that from a Catholic perspective, and, you know, I don't think you can get that at other educational institutions that shall remain nameless.
Yeah, so Dr. Adam DeVille, University of St. Francis, and the chair of philosophy and theology. It's going to make a lot of sense, too, because he's going to be here in September, our Faith and Healing series, which we talked all about last year, where we have another full lineup. And so Adam DeVille will headline that in September. Also, as always, brought to you by Cartridge World.
Yeah, Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great. It's perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. Plus, business customers, pickup and delivery are available.
515-564-7400, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, online, cartridgeworld.com. Our friend Joe over there would be he'd love to help you out. So again, thanks to Cartridge World, Mercy College of Health Science. As Bud's already pointed out, Dr. Adam DeVille, he's going to be on in a minute, so stick around and we will have a wonderful conversation. This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher.
Iowa Catholic Radio has launched Encounter Jesus, 1 week challenge, evangelization made easy by telling friends and family about Catholic radio. According to the Catholic Radio Association, those that listen to Catholic radio are 95% more spiritually engaged, 94% increase their time in prayer, and 62% end up increasing their confession attendance. Just invite your friends and family to listen for 1 week and let the Holy Spirit do the rest. Let's all pray that more people will encounter Jesus.
Be sure to tune into my show, John Leonetti in the Morning, to start your day. Thanks to Plaza Dental Group, Catholic-owned and good friends to Iowa Catholic Radio. Comfortable Dentistry, 515-344-3523, online at dmsmiles.com.
Support for Dowling Catholic Sports 365 is supported in part by Monroe Law Office. Ken Monroe has provided 28 years of helping injured Iowans recover from accidents and work-related injuries. Monroe Law Office is a great blessing to Iowa Catholic Radio. MonroeLawOffice.com.
We are back with the Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. So, Bud, we have, like I said, a very deep and interesting topic today. I know sometimes people can maybe bristle a bit at what we're throwing out there. So, talking about plundering the Egyptians, where do we get that story from?
So, it's from the Book of Exodus when the Lord frees the Israelites from Egypt, from bondage and slavery to Egypt. As they're going, I'm trying to remember exactly how the verse phrases it, but God turns the hearts of the Egyptians, and they actually start to give over many of their goods, cattle, but also fine goods, gold, jewelry, things like that. And so it says that the Israelites plundered the Egyptians that day.
And it's a very interesting concept to think of. I love this as a work of biblical exegesis that shows how this ends up in other theology, that you think about this and pagan gold is used to furnish the altars to the true worship of God. And so, therefore, throughout time, the church has said, if there's something that the pagans do well, it's only good and right that we use it in service for the truth. And to that end today, we have Dr. Adam DeVille, Chair, Philosophy and Theology, and Associate Professor, Program Director of the Master of Arts in Theology at University of St. Francis in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
It's wonderful to get to actually talk to you. It's one of those modern deals where I think we've talked quite a bit on the old Facebook, but it's much better to talk to you in person, quote-unquote,
indeed,
on the radio.
Yep, indeed. Yes, thank you.
So we've been introducing this topic for people about, you know, how is it that the church throughout time has maybe appropriated sources outside of what they would consider normal ones, but then also in contemporary time, how is it that we're maybe supposed to approach thinkers that maybe we wouldn't on first thought assume would be helpful for the church? And so I know you've written on this, and we'd love to hear some of your insights about this.
Yeah, thank you. It is an interesting question, and I think it's a perennial question because, when it comes to that famous tension that the Lord describes about being in the world but not of it, we have to figure out how to negotiate the particular context we find ourselves in, and what of it we might find useful and good, what of it we might have to reject outright, and what of it we might be able to borrow with some changes. And I think that's something that Christians have really had to do from the very beginning, and I think we're still doing it. Some of the debates and disagreements, even in the church today, on a variety of topics, have to do with exactly that question: how do we engage the wider world? You know, do we? The two temptations, it seems to me, are always to either reject it totally. A kind of what's sometimes called a sectarian temptation. We wall ourselves off. Or the other temptation is to accept everything uncritically, and basically any difference between the church and the world disappears, and the church basically becomes an adjunct to the world. Whereas I think the Catholic approach has been to say, no, we're not going to do either of those. We're going to engage in some discernment and see what is good that we can use, what we can't use, and what we might want to borrow with change. And that's that kind of process of discernment about what exactly we can plunder here.
Yeah, and that's a great setup for the discussion. For us in our show, you know, because we so commonly talk about the common good, social teachings of the church, it's obvious in sort of contemporary times there's a big debate about what sources in wider society can be brought to bear when it comes to these sort of social issues and who is a good source to use and who's not. But before we get to the contemporary part, I'd like to really point out that, because people will go like, well, why do you need to use someone like, you know, a Marx or anybody like this at all when we have this great tradition? Well, I'd like to point out, if you go back to the infancy of the church, not even in its social teaching, we're talking about the doctrine of the Trinity, and the church found it very important to utilize pagan philosophy to parse these things out. I know that you are Eastern Rite Catholic, and so you would be much better Greek resource than either Bud or I. Do you think there's something to glean from those that infancy of the church that can guide us as we keep going into contemporary times?
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I taught a class on the Trinity last fall, and we were looking at that issue. And, you know, and in the era of the ecumenical councils, especially between Nicaea I in 325 and Chalcedon in 451, that's very much what the Church was engaged in. You know, we have this nascent sense that God has revealed himself as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, but you know, the world's coming at us, and in fact, we're coming at ourselves with some questions about, well, how does that all hold together? You know, we're accused by some of you know, being polytheists or tritheists, and we say, no, we're monotheists. There is only one God, but we say this God's been revealed in three persons. How do we describe that? And you know, a lot of those debates found themselves up against a limitation of their own resources and vocabulary, and so they started looking around in some cases to relatively obscure Greek philosophical terms, and they said, you know, they tried a few of them on and said, well, this kind of works, but maybe it's going to cause more problems, so we're not going to use those terms. But then we settled on some other language and said, yeah, this seems to come as close as we can right now, or this is the best we can find right now to help us understand, you know, the relation between the persons of the Godhead. And so yeah, right from the get-go, as you say, on you know major dogma, the church was aware of her own limits and aware also that others, non-Christians, might nonetheless have some useful things, some useful language that we could use, and so you know we borrowed some of that language.
Thanks, Adam. This is Bud. I'm putting some more flesh on those bones. When we look throughout Christian history, could you talk some for our listeners about better or worse examples of plundering the Egyptians? I mean, all sorts of Christian thinkers have done this. Who's done it well?
Yeah, good question. You know, it's interesting that sometimes it's hard to see who's done it well and who's done it poorly, except in retrospect. And even then, sometimes I think we have to be a little bit cautious. Because none of this ever takes place in a vacuum, and you know, you've got the sort of the politics of the present moment, and people sometimes get caught up in that. I mean, a classic medieval example would be, you know, Thomas Aquinas and some of the early suspicion around him that only later on was removed because people felt like he's plundered a little too much from Greek philosophy. Closer to our own day would be Cardinal Newman, you know, who was thought by some after his reception into the church in 1845 to have plundered a little too much from that kind of Anglican Oxford patristic ethos that he was such a part of. You know, and he wasn't a Thomist, and he wasn't doing theology the way that most 19th century Roman Catholics thought it should be done, so he was kind of under a cloud for a while. And then we realized, no, he's doing it, but he's doing it in a different way. And so, you know, sometimes the politics of the present moment can make the plunderer look suspect, and only later on do we say, no, they did it in a good way. But conversely, we can look back on someone and say, well, you may have gone a little too far. You may have borrowed a little too much, and something that was distinctive about Christianity got lost. And, you know, I think we see some examples of that in late 20th century interreligious dialogue on the part of some Catholics, not all by any means, who I think with good intention nonetheless kind of go a little too far in basically saying, well, you know, the God of Christianity, for example, is the God of Islam, and they're the same, just, you know, different So I think it requires some discernment as to see, well, has this person gone too far? Have they done a good job, or have they maybe taken in some things that weren't helpful?
You are listening to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. We're speaking with Dr. Adam DeVille, Chair of Philosophy and Theology at University of St. Francis in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Adam, it's one of these great temptations for a good purpose, like you were saying. I don't think anybody maliciously throughout our 2,000 years set out to say, this Christianity stuff's fine, but let's make it more Aristotelian, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of time what happens is people are confronted with problems that are new, and then the idea is like, well, what resources do we have to work through those problems? So we already talked about the great Trinitarian debates. Like you said, some of them were almost intractable toward their time, these rival groups that didn't know quite what to do next. And the same thing you start seeing with the Middle Ages, when people see a lot of Greek philosophy refracted, through Islamic philosophy, but really dealing with issues for the day. So I don't know if you wouldn't mind speaking to that element too, is, this isn't something we like go seek just to like do something new and neato. I mean, I know sometimes when you run into academic types like us, it does sometimes seem like we're just trying to figure out how to do a new dissertation.
But
there really is this idea that the church does run into these issues that the world sets at its doorstep, and then we have to go looking for the best way to approach what's new to us and this pressing issue for ourselves.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's not that people just want to sit around and concoct new things for the sake of newness. It is the sense that we've got this question and we're looking around. What do we do? And here's where I think it's really important to have a really wide-ranging knowledge of the history of the church and the full breadth of her tradition in all of its forms, because when you're confronted with what seems to be a new question, there's a very good likelihood, I would say, that there are resources within the Christian tradition that can be brought to bear on that question, but we may have forgotten them, or we may have overlooked them, or we may not have been aware of them, or we may have left them aside thinking, well, this doesn't work anymore, only to discover down the road that it does work, and this is exactly what we need. One of the great Dominican theologians of the 20th century who was so important at the Second Vatican Council, Yves Congar, talks about what he calls the great law of Catholic reform. He says consists in reimmersing oneself in the tradition. He says it's not when you look for a solution to a new question, you're not looking to create something ex nihilo, out of nothing. You're looking to create something ex traditione, from the tradition. And I think, if we have the time and the patience to range across that tradition, we can usually find things. Now, they don't come prepackaged and ready-made, say, well, we've got this problem in 2017, let's go back and see what, Augustine in 4th century North Africa did, and we'll just import that, completely and apply it. I think God respects our freedom enough to say, you can be inspired by the tradition, you can find wisdom in the tradition, but you are still a responsible acting person, and you need to decide whether this part of the tradition should be brought back today, or whether there should be something else.
Adam, as you've pointed out, this has been a perennial question for Christians, and this quote is sometimes taken out of context, and it's kind of taken on a life of its own. But Tertullian, and is on the Prescription of Heretics, he asked this question: What does Athens have to do with Jerusalem? And I feel like in this conversation we're having, that's something that we're navigating. What does Athens have to do with Jerusalem? I don't want to jump ahead too quickly, but in our own day, sort of what does this look like? And I guess the question that I have in mind is, does the quality of the culture that one is swimming in matter? St. Thomas drew on Aristotle and also on some important Islamic thinkers. In our own day and age, as Christians kind of engage the culture, I don't know. I mean, this is a broad topic, but there's a lot about our culture today that's very shallow and materialistic, hedonistic. Is it even worth the time to start there?
Yeah, and that's a really important question. You know, you look around and you think, I mean, is this worthy of an engagement, or is this just so, you know, so trite and vacuous and superficial that you know, I'm going to be wasting my time, you know, pearls before swine kind of thing. And I think that's an important question. What do I engage? When do I engage? To what depth do I engage? Or at some points, I think it's legitimate, you know, as the Lord says, to just shake the sand off your sandals and walk out of town, because people are just not prepared and they're not willing. If you can find people who are, you know, a little more substantial and a little more willing, then go ahead. But that probably has to be one of your first questions before we look to engage culture and do all the rest. We have to say, well, what is there here to engage? I mean, is this all just so much, you know, thin gruel that it's not worth picking up the spoon? Or is there a more substantial food here that I can actually work with and derive some benefit from engaging?
The old-timey King James Version word that I like for that is offal. I remember growing up in Oklahoma and hearing an offal with a thick Southern Oklahoman accent is a wonderful word to hear. So, No, this is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Marr, speaking with Dr. Adam DeVille. So, Adam, you guys have set this up really well for what I want to talk about next. One of the things that I think happens in the contemporary world is, like you said, we're searching for a good sparring partner. Because half the time, engagement with the world is, okay, we see what we can plunder, but it's also, let's get some good resistance, right? If we have someone who pushes us, right? This is, you know, oftentimes it was the heretics that pushed us to define orthodoxy. So let's actually find some good sparring partners. And sometimes the really frustrating thing is, the contemporary world hasn't given us great ones. So, and so I think sometimes when you see Christian Catholic thinkers saying, well, let's argue with Nietzsche, let's argue with a Freud or a Marx, the reason is because the contemporary world doesn't even do a good job of addressing who spoke well about it. You know, it's like people are on purpose giving us straw men that will do us no good. So I think we keep coming back to these quote unquote modern masters, not necessarily sometimes because it's just that they're the best we have. Like us being pushed by Nietzsche is much better than like Richard Dawkins, for instance.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, and I one of your articles, I think you talk about this specifically with Freud. You don't have to get into this, it's too deep, but is there something about that where we go, okay, well, we're going to like engage with Freud because we're missing someone else to do that with?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, the giants of the past compared to kind of some of the less than giant people today that we have to have to sort of put up with. And I think people do say, well, let's go back and engage people of greater substance, like, you know, whether it's a Marx or a Freud or a Nietzsche, both because there is greater substance, but also because, you know, in some ways we're still living off the effects of their ideas.
Good
and
point.
We're still living out some of those ideas. And so it's not like, well, you know, Nietzsche's been dead, and they're all dead. Some cases for three quarters and more of a century, but they've had such a profound impact that we still go back to them. But yeah, if you're looking for sort of the contemporaries, I mean, there are a few people of substance, you know, engaging, you know, major philosophical questions today. But a lot of it is chasing after the latest new thing, or, you know, academics can unfortunately be just as much a herd animal as anybody else, and you know, people chasing after the latest fad because it is a fad, not because there's something substantial there to engage. So yeah, I think there is a tendency to continue to engage some of these older figures, both because of their lingering influence and also because there's just a lot more there.
Right.
Adam, this is just a matter of personal curiosity for me. I've studied and written on the works of Cardinal Newman. And in one of your blog posts, you say that Catholics should read his work just on the sheer loveliness of his prose, if for no other reason. I'm just curious, as someone coming from that Eastern Catholic perspective. How did you first discover the works of Newman, and what did that look like?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I'm coming up the 20th anniversary next month of my reception into the church. I actually grew up Anglican in Canada, and in the mid to late 90s, when Anglicanism was falling into ever greater doctrinal incoherence, I kind of realized that I was headed Romeward, if you will, and so I sat down in the summer of 96. I'd gone to a used bookstore just down the street from where I was living at the time, and I'd gone through there and picked up a couple of Newman's works, including the Apologia, and I remember saying to myself that this was a very dangerous book to read, given where I was at, indeed it was. So any Anglican coming into the Catholic Church, it seems almost required reading or something that you've picked up Newman. So I read the Apologia, and then the Essay on the Development of Doctrine, and a lot of his sermons, and some of his other writings. And then I was actually fortunate just this past semester to be able to work Newman into one of my courses on Development of Doctrine, and get back to him again after a long time. So that was a lot of fun.
And I think that is actually a really good way to cap what we're talking about. When you think about Development of Doctrine and then also Plundering the Egyptians, this seems to be all in a similar vein with how the church, like you said, revitalizes itself by looking back to the tradition, but also in that sort of having the sort of incarnate contact with the world, so that it doesn't become too earth ethereal, it doesn't become too Manichaean. When we, to really bring this back home for us with a Catholic social teaching, I think sometimes people look at people engaging a diversity of people who are talking about social issues all across the quote-unquote left-right spectrum, and people can rightfully get weary and worried about it, because we all know that there's some really, I'm trying to be charitable, low-grade interaction from both sides that can make us look pretty ridiculous. But I think that if we have that sort of faith that the church has, that if we in faith approach the world, that the gates of hell don't have to prevail. So we really can be better from these sort of engagements. And I guess my hope from our sort of discussion today is something like this, a call to people who are predisposed to this, to have that sort of faithful engagement to see how we might be better on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And to recognize, I mean, it can be uncomfortable, but to recognize, okay, well, I don't necessarily know how the engagement's going to unfold. I don't necessarily understand all the issues. And to be aware of your own limits on the one hand, but also to have enough trust to proceed, believing that that ultimately, you know, if it is true, it will out, it will win, and that if what you're looking for and debating and searching for is the truth, then that's going to come out in the end, even if you don't necessarily see how that's possible right now. If you have the trust that, as you say, that the church will prevail ultimately, that God will prevail ultimately. That is to say.
That's right. Well, Dr. Adam DeVille, it's been fantastic speaking to you. Just want to throw some props out. If people go to Amazon, your book, Orthodoxy and the Roman Papacy, Ut Unum Sint and the Prospects of East-West Unity, you can go buy that on Kindle or paperback. I know that we've ordered one for our own library, so Mercy College of Health Science students should check it out. You also have a blog, easternchristianbooks.blogspot.com. That's where some of the things we've been referring to. Wonderful art. I mean, and by the way, I just want to point out, you put a lot of work into blog posts. You're one of the last working men of the blog generation. I'm very proud of you on that one.
Thanks.
And then finally, you're going to be here in Des Moines in September.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Yeah.
It's been great. I'm glad that we got to talk to you this summer. We look forward to September. Dr. Adam DeVille, thank you for coming on The Uncommon Good.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Adam.
God bless. All right, folks, stick around. In a minute, we'll be back with another great moment in church history. We haven't had one for a while, so stick around. We'll be back in a minute.
For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that everyone who believes in him might not perish, but might have eternal life.
helping you grow in your relationship with Jesus Christ. Iowa Catholic Radio.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio's broadcast of Dowling Catholic Sports and Activities is provided by Kemin, using science to improve the world.
Kemin is on the leading edge of molecular science, manufacturing more than 500 specialty ingredients used by the feed and food industries and the health, nutrition, and beauty markets.
Kemin's vision is to improve the quality of life by touching half the people of the world every day with their products and services.
Kemin, using science to improve the world. Online at Kemin.com.
Thank you, R&R Realty Group, for underwriting Dowling 365. R&R Realty Group has been accommodating business expansions and real estate solutions since 1985, solving commercial real estate needs by establishing long-term relationships built on trust.
Thank you, Ashworth Vision Clinic, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Ashworth Vision Clinic online at ashworthvision.com. Ashworth Vision Clinic, 515-440-4610.
Support for programming of Catholic Women Now, partially provided by the Des Moines Law Offices of Fred Haas. Over 30 years helping injured Iowans recover losses from accidents and work-related injuries. Fred, double D, Haas, double A, fredhaas.com.
We're back with the Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher.
It's been a while since we've had a great moments in church history. Today's is about St. Thomas Aquinas, so fire it away.
Great moments in church history.
The year 1268. The place, the University of Paris in France. Thomas Aquinas was beginning his second stint as regent master there, but this time, things were gonna get ugly.
While Thomas' first stint at the UMP involved defending the mendicant orders and beginning his magnificent work, the Summa Contra Gentiles, this most recent regency has been no cakewalk. Thomas has been accused of liking Averroism and Aristotle too much, with Franciscan writer William of Baglione accusing Thomas of being the blind leading the blind. Even his respected friends Bonaventure and John Peckman expressing their worries about Thomas' work.
In reality, Thomas was deeply disturbed by the spread of Averroism and was angered when he discovered people teaching it to Parisian students in his school. On December 10th, 1270, the Bishop of Paris issued an edict condemning 13 Aristotelian propositions as heretical and excommunicating anyone who continued to support them, convincing many that Thomas's days in the big leagues were numbered.
People think Thomas is just some egghead, Kent. But in reality, some of the most popular work he ever did were sermons he preached every day in Naples for Lent 1273. And in a culminating moment in his life, Thomas lingered after matins and was seen by the sacristan to be levitating in prayer with tears before an icon of the crucified Lord. Christ said to Thomas, "You have written well of me, Thomas. What reward would you have for your labor?" And Thomas responded, "Nothing but you, Lord."
Although after another mystical experience, Thomas saw all his works as straw compared to the glory that he saw, Thomas was still hounded with accusations of rationalism after his death. 3 years after his death in 1277, that same bishop, Tempierre, in Paris, included 20 of Thomas's proposition and condemnation he wrote. But that would not be the last word on St. Thomas Aquinas.
It's been only 50 years since he's died, Jim. But already the Universal Church is ready to pronounce Thomas a saint. The devil's advocate in the case objected that there were no miracles. One of the cardinals answered, "Te miraculis, quote articulis. There are many miracles in his life as articles in his Summa. He won't be denied!"
Thomas would not only come to be known as the angelic doctor, but in 1879 in the encyclical Eterni Patris, Pope Leo XIII would choose Thomas as the prime example of Catholic intellectual investigation and engagement. This has been another great moment in church history.
I think one of the best things about this show is our pronunciation of French names.
Yeah, you seem to go into a different voice when we have a foreign word come up.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really great at languages, but I seem to remember that that's like the first lesson they teach you in language class, right?
Well, it is crazy to me listening to that great moments in church history that St. Thomas Aquinas, the theologian of the Western half of the church, that at his death there were suspicions about his work. And it's kind of a reminder, to trust in God's providence. You know, Thomas, to the end of his life, had a strong devotion to the Eucharist, to the Blessed Sacrament. And he sort of placed his own life's work in God's hand and was ultimately vindicated.
No, one of my favorite things about that is Thomas ever gentle ox that he is, when there were all these people yelling at him, the name he came up for them was the Grumblers. And I'm sure, like, in Thomas's mind, he's like, all right, guys, I got a name for him. Don't get too mad. I'm going to call him the Grumblers. And everyone's like, oh, Thomas, that's not even mean.
Yeah, and speaking of another great theologian, I'm glad we worked in some Cardinal Newman today. I think what Adam said about his work is so important. You know, Newman made the point in his development of doctrine that when some people look at church history or even philosophy in general, they think that the further back that you get in history, the purer the source is, kind of like a spring. And Newman said, you know, church history, Catholic doctrine is kind of like a raging river that it picks up momentum over time. And so the further downstream you get, in a sense, the stronger the river rages. And you see this, Adam just brought up so many good examples of the church engaging culture. And that's one thing that I've always loved about Catholicism, the kind of purifying of cultural elements that are around it, but also just a willingness to really spar with the best thinkers of each era.
Yeah, and I think this is a great note to close with Thomas Aquinas, because people act like he's like Superman in his, like, you know, fortress of solitude, but like actually being part of the church intellectual tradition is more like whitewater rafting and being willing to, you know, butt up against the rocks and the waves. Well, folks, it's been a great show. Just a few things coming up so you should know. Strongman Day, June 24th, 2017, calling all men of bravery and valor. It's going to be at Camp Dodge Historic Pool Pavilion in Johnston, Iowa. $30 includes lunch. And not only is it rosary and mass and everything like that, but they're also going to have physical feats of strength.
Are you and I allowed at Strongman Day?
I don't know. I think we get to like talk about it on the radio. Like, it's like the weak man tent, and that's where...
I'll be delivering Gatorade to the actual strongman.
To actually people. So that's coming up. Bible in a Year, 5:30 a.m. every morning. The Rosary, of course, make sure to listen to that. Also, we had a great carathon. We exceeded expectations, but it's still the case that to bring you all of the programming that you love, we are a nonprofit, and just want to make an appeal that, you know, if you will think about us and maybe in between your some of your bills, reoccurring bills, that's a nice way to aid the ministry that is Iowa Catholic Radio. Well, this has been the Uncommon Good, but it's been great to talk to you about this with all of you and everything like that.
Yeah, another fun show, and so please find us next week at the same time.
So may the Prince of Peace, Jesus Christ, reign in our hearts and our families, in our homes, city, state, nation, the entire world, the entire universe, galaxies of galaxies. This is the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher, we will see you next week. Take care.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.
Established in Des Moines in 1924, St. Vincent de Paul's assists those living in poverty to become self-sufficient by helping to remove roadblocks on their journey out of poverty.
With two thrift stores, a social services department, and an education center, St. Vincent de Paul served over 10,200 clients last year. All of their services are funded by local donations, grants, and sales from their thrift stores.
SVDPDSM.org, 515-282-8327. This message is brought to you by Homemakers Furniture.
Be sure to tune into my show, John Leonetti in the Morning, to start your day. Thanks to Plaza Dental Group, Catholic-owned and good friends to Iowa Catholic Radio. Comfortable Dentistry, 515-344-3523, online at dmsmiles.com.
Thank you to Mercy College of Health Sciences, downtown Des Moines, for underwriting The Uncommon Good with me, Bo Bonner.
And I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
We're heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. on the Iowa Catholic Radio Network.
A fun and engaging new show that we hope our listeners will love. Be sure to listen.
Hey friends, John Leonetti here, and if you haven't heard, beginning May 22nd, my show, John Leonetti in the Morning, will be expanding to a full 90 minutes, 7 to 8:30. We've heard you, and because of you, local programming here at Iowa Catholic Radio continues to expand. So tune in and tell a friend. God bless you.
Announcing the new Strongman event. All men, young and old, will just love this. A new type of fellowship in physical and spiritual strengths to be challenged. This will be fun. A unique blend of competition and conference. Compelling national and local speakers will focus on improving both aspects of body and soul. Register competitive or non-competitive. Buy a ticket to give to a younger man. Let's reach more men for Christ. Go to iowacatholicradio.com to register and download the flyer.